welcome to the FinTech Scaling Show. This podcast is sponsored by Scale Up Consulting, helping FinTech startups create a scalable organization to support an ever-increasing demand. When you're ready to grow, reach out to us at richard@scaleupconsulting.co. Now, over to the show with Richard Doty, founder and host.
Hey, what's up, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the FinTech Scaling Show, where we talk to executives and founders from around the world, and we get their insights into how they not only grow their businesses and expand their business, but also grow themselves during the process. And super excited today to have Jan on the show. Jan is the co-founder and the CEO of Autonomy out in the States, out in New York. Prior to launching this business, Jan's also launched other ventures and has held senior positions in some of the top and most influential financial services companies across the globe, including the likes of Citi and also ING, to name a few. And super excited, Jan, to have you on the show. Welcome.
Yeah, thanks, Richard, for having me. Very excited to be on the show. And yeah, as you said, this is in the international community. So, you know, I think there's talents everywhere in the world. So I'm happy that you are looking at the across the Atlantic. But I'm sure there's going to be more conversation in Europe and Asia in the future as well.
Brilliant, brilliant. And you know, everyone, as you know, before we kick off the show and get into the guts of it, I always like to give a bit of a chat, give you a bit of an insight as to what we're going to be talking about. And I think now more so than ever, as we start the new year and we start looking at how we want to scale up ourselves, how we want to give ourselves that boost, how do we expand as business owners and individuals, how do we expand to more profits? What's the best starting point that might have the most immediate impact to reach your dreams, to reach your profit goals, to reach your expansion? And in all honesty, you know, I've grappled with this over the years, and I think there are many answers. I really believe there are many answers, but it also depends on not only your situation as a company, as a founder, as an executive, but also on your individual situation. And ultimately, there's going to be numerous actions that can be taken. But if I dig down deep and I ask myself, what is that one action that might supersede all others? And it's an action that it doesn't matter whether you're an entrepreneur or a solo entrepreneur that is just starting out at a company, or if you're in a big corporate and you're running a multi-million dollar corporation with thousands of employees. I believe that a great or brilliant place to start your upwards journey is defining, articulating, and living, and also getting out there and promoting what your purpose is, right? And it can be said that the result of everything that you as an executive, as an individual, as a founder, everything that you do is determined potentially by the purpose that you're driving towards, right? And I think it's important to understand what purpose is. Purpose is your reason for doing something. It's the core essence of why you do what you do. And it's something that at the start of a new year, we should all be thinking about. You know, what is our purpose? What are we striving towards this year? Yeah, and also in life, and start building towards those in micro steps. We're not going to land the big catch potentially on day one, but what are those micro steps that we can take towards achieving that purpose that we set out? And to kick off the discussion and to bring Jan into the show, into the discussion, I'd be very interested to get a sense from you as to what you think right now is really interesting as we start off and we kick off the new year in 2022.
Yeah, this was quite the intro. I like what you put on the table. It's pretty front loaded as well. Now, I want to say a couple of things. I think pretty much in line with you know, whatever you just described. I think my starting point and is actually pretty on point this week, because I just had this review and this presentation with my team internally. That was essentially like two things attached to this one meeting. You know, the first one is 2021 year in review, recap, and trying to reflect on what happened. And God knows how much happened last year, right? In many fronts. So we talk about fintech here. We can talk about, you know, obviously fintech, insurance technology, in blockchain, cryptos, all these good things, NFTs. I'm not going to give you all the buzzwords, but what I'm saying, but we also focus on logistics, supply chain, global trades. And the whole market has been shaken up to its core. And my stance on that standpoint, when I was talking to my team, was reflecting on what happened, trying to digest, trying to have kind of a concise snapshot, what it represents, and essentially think through it with humility, right? So being humble about what happened and not trying to kind of like being too much of a overthinker about, you know, whatever happened. Because what's in the past, it's good to actually extract the best value of those events and circumstances. But reality, you want to make sure that you can reflect with humility. That was my starting point. And the second thing that happened is essentially getting us into projecting into 2022 and, you know, obviously potentially next year and in the future. But you mentioned micro steps. I think it's good to see a little bit of the North Star far away, but it's also very crucial for early stage startup to kind of being pragmatic, right? And being practical about the execution, implementation of things, product build, platform, and, you know, go to market. And what's interesting in terms of our positioning and myself as a leader in the team and the market, while, you know, I want to stay humble about what happened in the past, what I also want to do going forward is to remain aggressive. I want to be continuing being aggressive in terms of what kind of technology, product, modeling, and so forth that we bring into the market to continue disrupting the space. Because, you know, if anything that you want to learn is last year showed the best and the worst. And in the second category, the worst, there's very lackluster inefficiencies in the space, you know, at so many levels. And this is a screaming sign of for change, right? So tech startups such as us are going to be building and reshaping, you know, the future of those industries. It's not going to be as a bread and butter kind of do as it used to be. You need to be going 180 degrees with most of the thesis and the product built that people have been seeing in the past.
Because that's really interesting what you're saying. The markets changed a lot and changed dramatically. Not just your market. I think the whole global economy and the global market has changed. And you needing to make certain that you continue disrupting and aggressively disrupting, so you at the front edge of innovation and the front end of giving the consumer today, because the consumer today, what they want in a way tomorrow, right? Because consumers think differently. They don't think like they did in the 80s or the 90s. They've got different options out there. So we have to be nimble. We have to be quick at how we understand and analyze the market and then give them what they need. I mean, I think a great example is the BlackBerry Apple example, right? BlackBerry rested on their laurels, a great phone back in the day, but as the technology started coming out from different competitors, they didn't do anything. They didn't innovate. They were focused internally on what they were good at, not looking at the wider market and going, there's disruption coming from other players such as Apple, et cetera, right? So how are you taking in those reflection points and making certain that you consistently build that product that disrupts and aggressively sort of delivers a new version or a new application into the market on a continuous basis?
Yeah, that's a pretty good question. So I like your analogy. I don't know if you did it on purpose, but BlackBerry came in the news.
I did.
Yeah. So they actually released like the last, what well, actually they shut down the last BlackBerry a few days ago.
Yeah, I cried.
And I remember because I used BlackBerry like everyone pretty much in the space, in the corporate space. And I have to say it was extremely convenient, you know, the keyboards and whatnot. And then, you know, 2007, Steve Jobs coming with this black mirrored slab, and he said, you know, kind of put forward, this is just the new things that people, that everybody was going to want. Yeah. Forget about this clunky keyboard. And you're going to want to use those little icons. And, you know, it was pretty hard to grasp, you know, what was talking about, and iPods, iTunes, and also like maps and emails integrated. But to make a parallel or an analogy to what we're doing at Autonomy, I think it's very clear that it doesn't have to be, or it cannot be like a pure North Star dream with a moonshot at the end of the day, where you want to put something crazy in the head of a consumer. Or in our case, it's actually a B2B corporation, so it's more corporate clients. But it doesn't matter; the end clients is a human being, so they all, you know, kind of behave in the same fashion, so to speak. Yeah. And if you don't want to be like too moonshotty about your product, you want to be getting into some sort of a thought process that gets you pragmatic approach in terms of disrupting while continuing being pushing forward aggressively, right? Mm-hmm. So long story short, the way it happens is we actually spend a huge amount of time in terms of mapping out every component of what a product means. Mm-hmm. So let's say in our case, it's going to be detection of events in the supply chain, activation of legal terms through our smart contract, digital payments, pricing, quoting, automatic subscription, all those items. What we're doing on a pragmatic standpoint in order to continue disrupting is actually extracting all the value that are necessary for a product to exist, let's say in the current state, and bringing the best of the technology for every single component. So kind of leaving every stone unturned in the sense that we want to have each single part of the product being innovative, right? And while still catering to the traditional clients and traditional partners in terms of what they're expecting a product to be, right? So because if you just like put a rocket launch into an insurance policy, then people are not connecting the dots. Yeah. If you're bringing up a digitized policy that's actually responding and checking all the boxes that they used to, but each single box is actually attached to a very innovative technology, then in that sense, you're actually extracting the best of the two worlds.
And we're talking a lot about product here. And I get it. You're putting a lot of, ultimately you're a tech company, you put a lot of emphasis on product, and a huge effort, a huge time is spent in looking at innovating here, right? So here's the rub. Are we innovating for the sake of innovating, or are we innovating to solve the most pressing problem that a customer has today?
Yeah, it's a little bit of a catch-22 question.
Yeah.
Obviously, that's the latter. I'm glad that we're refocusing on the market and the clients. Yes, no, absolutely. While the technology is an amazing topic to be discussing, and we could go for another 5 hours, but what really matters in our product is resolving the pressing pain points in the supply chain, right? So when you want to reflect on 2021 and even, you know, to a larger extent to 2022, is the explosion of e-commerce through the pandemic. You know, the complete shift in terms of living standards, remote work, and the changing behavior of consumers that are essentially at home and buying stuff on Amazon, eBay, whatnot. and, you know, essentially overflowing demand or supply, actually, supply into the market in terms of, you know, buying products left and right, and the supply chain not keeping up with it. So the resulting effect has been essentially a very large backlog. So we've seen it with, you know, the Ever Given Swiss Canal story, where, you know, the obviously this event was, it was a quirk, but it was also like pretty representative that that industry is not reacting well to events. And then the kind of the ramp up to the holidays, you know, the past 4 months where backlog in Port of LA, Port of Long Beach, with all those vessels coming from Asia, has been essentially clogging the whole supply chain to a point that some warehouses was completely empty with dozens of back orders that they can fulfill for their own clients at the end of the day. So what we're bringing to the market is essentially a very simple shipping and cargo insurance product that's resolving this one pain point that's very simple to understand, but also very, very stringent and very pressing, you know, at that point. So we are resolving for quick adjudication of cargo delays and interruptions of supply chain by automating the whole chain of events. We detect this delay right away. We use our smart contract to essentially operate the insurance policy terms, and the payment is being sent out in 45 minutes to the end clients, instead of 45 days, right? So 45 days is actually kind of understating how much time, you know, a consumer and an insurance claim adjuster need to work on the claims in order to kind of resolve when it does resolve, but we do it same day, right? And all that is extremely transparent. And it also gives a great result on the operating model, but because we compress admin costs by 90%. So all of a sudden, our insurance partners are also saving a ton of money by using our automation. And therefore, we can free up a lot of margins for profits, but we also can offer better competitive rates to the end customers.
And this is cool. I mean, we chatted before the show, and we also were chatting last year. And I told you then, and I'll tell everyone now, this is a massive headache that's taken away from, you know, people in sort of trade finance world. And I recall when I ran my consumer products business and I was sourcing and exporting consumer products from mainland Europe into mainland China, pretty much the process that you went through was an absolute nightmare. Very manual, very, I want to say sticky, but I don't think it is sticky. It's unsticky. It just, everything was everywhere. There was leaks and cracks, and no one knew what and how to solve this. So I love the fact that the tool, you're inserting this tool into that process. So there aren't leaks, there aren't cracks, and it just runs through. It just runs straight through, right? But as you entered this journey, how did you... And also, I guess, on your reflection of 2021, how's your purpose, how's that purpose shaped your journey, your entrepreneurial journey, and also shaped the way that you are a leader, not only in your business, but also in the ecosystem? Because this is a big problem that I've gone through. I didn't think it would ever get solved in my lifetime. But I'm glad to have found you. But yeah, how's your purpose driving your business and also driving you as a leader to solve this sort of problem for not only you, but others out there in the ecosystem?
Yeah, so I think there's definitely like several angle to that question. You know, obviously on the personal standpoint, you introduce or my profile as, you know, kind of an established, you know, Wall Street senior executive in the space. And I really enjoyed being in the space for, you know, almost two decades, worked with a bunch of talents, exposed to government, large corporation, where we were extended, you know, large financing transactions, that kind of stuff. But, you know, what I actually extracted from this experience is not only the business side of things, but kind of learning that incumbents and large corporation gets very complacent about their operations, the way they manage their own processes and their technology stacks. And it got me frustrated from day one up until the time I actually resigned which was almost 2 years ago now. And throughout that journey of being frustrated, working for large corporation, making profits, but being very complacent about their internal gearing, so to speak, I actually built this willingness and this passion to actually bring innovation internally, right? Yeah. So I was part of this innovating team within City Ventures, bringing blockchain project, machine learning project internally in order to essentially bring the best of the tech for their clients. And this is how I built my passion for entrepreneurship. And out of this, few years working in both traditional finance and also kind of like fintech innovation within a big incumbent, I told myself, this is not going to happen. While they're doing, pretty great stuff, it's still like a drop in the bucket, the way they innovate, that has to come from the outside, right? And I started to be passionate about blockchain, decentralized finance, and also kind of like looking at the best way to bring process automation to insurtech and fintech. And that was kind of a starting point. And when I formed my team, it was essentially one co-founder, one good friend of mine and schoolmates, Seb. We went to school together 20 years ago in Paris. Now he lives in Denver, Colorado. We were both passionate about bringing technology. He was also working for a big automotive industrial conglomerate. And we were coming at it with the same angle of saying, okay, this is BS. This is dinosaur 101. We want to bring a very different touch to it. And we kept that approach internally within autonomy, within our team. I still have my mindset about being extremely disciplined when it comes to pricing, client relationship, legal structures that I learned in Wall Street. But I also, like 50% of my brain is all about being extremely creative, right? Yeah. Because, obviously we wouldn't be doing what we're doing here. So my style of leadership internally is trying to keep like a good amount of this direction in terms of the business intent and ambition, but also like kind of promoting and delegating to my experts on the web stack, the blockchain, Web3, machine learning, pricing, analytics, marketing, sales, and try to work with them and to get them to actually teach me stuff as we go along, because it's a group of people innovating. It's not a corporation with one guy on top or one woman on top. It has to be collaborative. And I think that's been the best so far for me, right? It's not so much profit sharing. I know my investor would hate me saying that I'm not obsessed with profit sharing, but or profit generating, but this is very much the creative and innovating topics that I'm the most passionate, and working with those talents that helped me achieve that goal. Now, to the second part of your question, obviously, from the inside out, my positioning of entrepreneur and fintech and insurtech in the space is actually very important for the growth of our company and for also market and product awareness in the space. Obviously there's a ton of very talented companies that have been proving out that similar technologies, similar product, similar client value can be monetized. And I'm very grateful to be in touch with a bunch of those CEOs and entrepreneurs. But it's very clear that we're doing something very different. We're very unique in our approach. And this podcast is a great outlet. I'm very grateful that you invited me. I want to get the word out there, that, autonomy is bringing very simplified and automated cargo insurance for the greater goods, so to speak. But I want to also sensitize the audience that, there's a bunch of technology that's coming up in the next few years, and we need to listen to experts in the space. So we're trying to actually bring awareness about client pain points, the state of the market, trying to be a little bit our own oracle and kind of like crystal ball oracle, where we can forecast a little bit of the trends so people get a sense of where we're headed. And also like being very transparent about the technology and the amount of innovation that we're bringing in. And all that, it's all about the public persona that we maintaining and we're trying to develop over time. And I'm being very grateful to be on that podcast. I was on several podcasts last year, Intratech Geeks, Intratech Nerds, Chainlink, SmartCon, which is one of the blockchain leader in the space. And in the next few weeks, I'll be showcasing the NASDAQ trade talks as well about, you know, one new product that we're bringing in, which is a cargo index. And very passionate about getting the word out there and being part of this new trend of technology and entrepreneurship.
Cool. And you mentioned a lot of, you mentioned you're out there promoting your purpose, your vision, your ideas, your uniqueness. And how do you internally, how do you make certain that your purpose is consistently understood by not only the team members that are coming in, but also the new guys and girls that are going to be onboarded over the coming months and coming years? How do you get them in sync and driving towards that purpose that you so clearly articulated to us?
Yeah, so that process is an iterative iteration process. It's not kind of you take a snapshot, this is what it is, everybody has to abide by it. The nature of what we're doing, obviously, it's extremely nimble and dynamic. And that's you know, what's good about it, but it's also takes some time and effort to maintain it. But specifically, we actually went through several brainstorming sessions with experts in the space where they tried to get us to come up with company values, right? And company's charter, so to speak, where we have a great amount of product, technology, innovation, client values, but everything comes down to how you can synthesize, right? This those values. And so that process is a little bit of back and forth. We're testing out some of the things that we think are representing our vision or our processes or our thought process and our mindset. But we keep changing, not to a great extent, but we kind of incrementally, you know, moving the needle so that we make sure that we can actually map out in the best fashion possible our company values. So that when, you know, young talents come in a year from now, we have this whatever one pager or just like a narrative to present and trying to express and communicate in very simple terms so they can register fairly quickly what it means to work for autonomy and what it means to actually service our clients, right?
Nice. And I guess during this process, as we all go into these journeys, I like to call it the hero's journey, where you are called, you feel like there's a call to action or a call for an adventure, i.e. you're the hero that goes on an adventure. We go through the ups and downs and we hit this, I guess, this abyss where we have a transformation. We are reborn and we finally come back to this place where we are free to live and do as we wish because we've gone through this topsy-turvy adventure, which is, you know, called entrepreneurship and founding companies and leading businesses. But during that adventure and during that journey, I've definitely seen it in myself. I've seen it with others. There's a change, right? There's a change to the founder, the executive, the team. There's a change of leadership style, maybe. There's an evolve that you evolve into a being that is confident, who's speaking in public. You evolve to a being that is confident in managing and leading teams. And you know, I'd like to know from you as a person that's got a strong purpose that is disrupting and innovating a very tired and old industry. By the way, I do love trade finance to everyone out there, but it does need a bit of disruption and innovation. How have you evolved your leadership style to drive and lead your purpose in a busy and noisy marketplace?
Yeah, I think I kind of coming back to where I started in terms of the meeting I just had with my team, which was, you know, 2021 in review and 2022 objectives, which is kind of the two sides of the same mirror. I think there's a place to be very kind of visual about what you're talking about, to be trying to translate and give some imagery about, you know, what's going on, what happened, and try to actually people to register your communication style. And there's a time to also kind of being much more laid back and listen, trying to just being conversational about how you interact with your employees.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think, you know, I started off by maybe like 2 years ago with a small team where it was all about discussing current topic of development, trying to get those clients in. And it was just like day by day, little bit of a routine. We were just like, you know, aiming at some short-term 3 months goal. And while it was the necessary steps, you know, as you get started,
yeah,
you know, it can become mundane for some employees, and not having clear directive and direction or axis, you know, for the future, it can be confusing a little bit. Yeah. So I had to also like, you know, reflect on my own work, right, as a leader, and trying to be more constructive, more organized about my thought, and trying to have those one-off conversation where I'm a little bit of a giver than a listener, right? So I have to give axes of development for the future. I have to be pretty firm about what I think it is and what I think it is gonna be, and therefore trying to lead the team towards certain direction, and then they get to figure out how to get there. But at least they have the end game in mind.
Yeah.
And I think this balance, it's a balancing act, right? So this balance of having pretty laid back conversation and also like more formal meetings about, you know, what's going on, I think it has been the evolution of the style of leadership so far. And I'm sure a lot of stuff's going to happen in the future. I'm going to be changing again, but you know, this is what's happening so far.
Cool. And as we wrap up this part of the show, you know, what are the two or three nuggets of advice that you would give to a startup founder or an executive out there that is in the middle of their journey or just starting out their journey and is a bit fuzzy on their purpose and their end goal? What would you say to them?
So three pieces of advice. I want to say never give up, never give up, never give up. I know it's a little cheesy.
It's good advice, right?
Be
does, resilient.
Yeah, resilience, I think, is the core of why we're here now.
Yeah.
And why another version, like in the metaverse, of our company would have failed, you know, in 2020 or last year. And, you know, it's kind of the flip side of that conversation is startup such as mine, such as ours, don't go bankrupt, right?
Yeah.
The startup, they fail when the founders stop trying.
Nice.
It's just...
I like it.
Yeah,
that's so true, right? That is so true. And it's difficult. It's not always easy to take the hard road and the hard path. Sometimes it's easier to fall back into what we're comfortable about, right? And I remember, you know, I'm from South Africa. I remember back in 92 or 93, Nelson Mandela came to my school and he said to me and a bunch of schoolboys, he said, you know, you guys have the choice. You decide what path you want to go down, right? You build your life. And the same in entrepreneurship and in life in general, you decide, right? And sometimes the path less traveled is the one with a nice sort of fruit bowl at the end, right?
Mm-hmm. No, that's a good analogy. I like that one. Yeah, I think it's all about being persistent and trying to, you know, wake up and kind of like ask yourself the right questions. The terrible investor meeting from the prior day or the client meeting that never goes through, then it is in the past. And then you look at the next investor.
Yeah.
I guess like another piece of advice, I think for most of my counterparts, we are in the fundraising game. As much as I don't think it's an efficient market, it is what it is. And fundraising is never what you think it's going to be. Right. And I think it is a great approach or greater approach. And I made some mistakes. Right. So that's why I'm saying that right now after the fact to stay very humble about your capital needs and the way you manage to capital formation. Right. And telling yourself that you'll start with self-funded on, you know, founder's capital at first, then you go for friends and family with very small tickets. And then you get to the angel side of things. And then you get to your first institutional VC ticket or check. It seems like very brutal process to go with so many steps to only raise maybe a million or two. But reality, following this kind of like organized or preset way of doing things, actually simplify your life quite a bit. Because if you want to go for the 5 million check after a couple months, you only have a prototype or a white paper, and you think you have the best thing since sliced bread, yeah, you're going to fail. You know, it's very unlikely that people are going to believe you, and you're fooling yourself, you're wasting your time, you're wasting everybody's time. So yeah, try to be humble about it, listen to people, what people have to say about the fundraising process, and trying to go step by step. It's only money, right? It's not the product that they're giving you. They're just giving you the means to achieve some goals. You still own the IP, the intellectual property, and the drive to make it happen.
Nice. And that's bang on. You know, nothing to add there. Yeah, some really salient advice, and take it on the chin, everyone. And work through it. Enjoy the process. And when the steps, as Jan said, when you get through those different steps, then different opportunities come. And that was a good way to end off that round, and a bit of a drum roll for the next round, which is the flash round. A bit of fun at the end of every podcast on the FinTech Scaling Show. The flash round, I ask three quick questions. They're lighthearted, a bit of fun. We want to know what he's made of, right? He's a Frenchman living in New York, so we want to give him a bit of a hard time.
I live in Brooklyn, actually. I live in Brooklyn, so I have tough skin.
Oh, there we go. There we go. He's in Brooklyn. Okay, so I ask you three questions, and then I give you the mic, and you are allowed to ask me one. So here we go. First one, Europe or the U.S.?
U.S.
Oh, boy. Okay, there we go. Product first or PR?
Product first.
Minimal viable product or most valuable pain point?
Most valuable pain point.
Love it. Brilliant. Okay, there we go. You got it from the horse's mouth. So now it's your turn. If you'd like to, shoot, fire away. Nothing, anything really. Just, I'm sure there's something you really say, I want to get richer for this.
Yeah. No. So I don't want to trick you. It's more like something that I genuinely want to understand best. So I've been a podcast listener for quite many years. I want to say maybe 4 or 5 years. And, you know, as everyone, I'm going for kind of the big landmark outlet. I'm not going to name names, but I love Sam Harris, and I love Scott Galloway, you know, these guys. And I listen to other smaller outlets as well. But so what is your kind of first principle or even direction that you want to bring your podcast toward? What is your vision here? I don't know if you're generating a lot of money, but as a business, how do you see evolving into this very exciting space?
Okay, so great question, by the way, and a bit of a long answer, but I'm going to give it to you anyway. I'm a consultant. I'm in a consulting business. My business is called Scale Up Consulting, and I've been doing this for several years. And during that time, I've consulted a lot of different people in many different countries. And what I realized is I was doing a lot of consulting one-on-one. So it was me and an executive, or me and a founder, or me and an individual. And I wanted more. I wanted to give more of myself to society. And I wanted to give more of the stuff that those individuals were sharing with me to society, right? So I wanted to go from one-to-one to one-to-many. And that's why I set up a podcast. I went from one-to-one to one-to-many, and all of a sudden, I built up a community. I built up a little following, which is cool. But more importantly, I'm starting to share my insights and guest insights like yours and others on a daily basis, weekly basis, with a wider community that is taking value from these conversations. And that value might only be a little 1% increment in whatever activity or whatever problem they're going through right now, but it's helping them. And I've seen, it's so nice to see that people start reaching out to me on LinkedIn or via email or, on my Twitter account saying that, I listened to Jan's episode. Really interesting what you said. I've implemented that, and actually it's working. And this happens to me pretty much nearly, you know, every day. I'd say it happens to me at least two or three or four times a day. And some random locations out there, some person in Vietnam, another person in Canada, another person in Joburg. And I'm like, okay, this is interesting. So that one too many is possible. But in order to do that, you've got to, I really needed to let go of a stigma that my knowledge is worth something. My knowledge is not worth anything if I don't get it out there, right? So that's why I did it. From a business point of view, it's just opened up a totally different channel to how I engage with the community, how I engage with people, how I engage with individuals. And I believe that everyone, no matter if you're a tech business, no matter if you're in services, manufacturing, it doesn't matter what area you're in. If you invest in podcasting, you actually invest in yourself as a speaker, as a public speaker, as a media personality. And it's most probably one of the greatest investments that I've ever made in myself. And also, you know, one of the greatest bits of knowledge that I'm consistently producing into a community that actually needs this stuff and wants this stuff. So yeah, long answer to maybe a short question, but that's the reason, and hope I answered it.
Yeah, no, I can relate. No, I love your answer. And I think I encourage more of those founders to come have similar conversation with your outlet or any other great podcast in the space. And I think, you know, it's just a great way to ground equalizer, so to speak, because you come here, you know, you come clean, you want to tell a story, but you know, you get challenged, and then you extract something out of it, and you move forward with kind of a richer narrative, and also, like, you know, you learn something. So it's great.
Okay, cool. And listen, as we wrap up the show, how can folk get in touch with you and the guys at Autonomy if they want to?
Yeah, no, sure. So we are, you know, we have a website, so autonomy.ai, OTONOMI.AI. We are on Twitter. We're very active on LinkedIn, Autonomy Intratech. And we obviously write a lot of those Medium article for Thought Leadership. So glad to be out there. And, you know, if people want to ask questions, they can send me an email at jan@autonomy.ai, and I would be glad to get on the call and chat.
Brilliant. And as we wrap up the show, just another mention about my book that's coming out, Unlock Hidden Profit Zones. I wrote it for you to help you get to where you want to get to this year, right? There's some challenges. We discussed it earlier on. There's challenges that, you know, everyone's going through this year, and I want to help you succeed this year. So if you want a copy, if you want to be on the distribution list as it gets sent out in February, drop me a note to richard@scaleupconsulting.co, and I'll make certain that you're on the distribution list. And yeah, and again, brilliant to have you on the show today. Loved everything that we walked through, and looking forward to a successful year for you. And, you know, let's link up again. Definitely keen to get you onto the show again at some point.
Thanks a lot for having me. That was great.